You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
So we started season one of this, the Missing Witches podcast, by telling the story of the artist, woman, witch behind the world's most famous tarot deck, Pixie Coleman Smith. And so it seems fitting that to spark season two, we dig into the life of another spectacular and forgotten tarot artist. This queen, this lady, in her 60s, as bombs rain down on London, dyes her hair red and navigates the night streets between the Lords of London, the world's most famous magician and Satanist, a feminist secret society, and a couple of young mathematicians, drawing a new world with new geometry. Lady Frieda Harris walked this crooked path in order to summon the knowledge she needed to bring a bright new divination deck to light. And then she retired to India to live on a houseboat. Lady Frieda Harris was perhaps the best friend, the Beast, Aleister Crowley ever had. And she used her own art, financial resources, and strength of character to convince him to collaborate with her. A project they thought would last months turned into years and resulted in the luminous Thoth Tarot deck. 2 minutes on Crowley. According to Lon Duquette, he introduced America to astrology, Isadora Duncan to the I Ching, and the poet Victor Newberg to hiking and high magic. As an agent provocateur writing for an English-language German propaganda newspaper in New York, he penned the outrageous and inflammatory editorials that provoked a reluctant United States Congress to enter World War II on England's side. During World War II, at the request of friend and naval intelligence officer Ian Fleming, Crowley provided Winston Churchill with valuable insights on the superstitious and magical mindset of the leaders of the Third Reich. He also suggested to the Prime Minister, if reports can be believed, that he exploit the enemy's magical paranoia by being photographed as much as possible giving the two-finger V for victory gesture. This sign is the manual version of the magical sign of Apophis Typhon, a powerful symbol of destruction and annihilation, which, according to the magical tradition, is capable of defeating the solar energies represented by the swastika. Just for balance, since Duquette thinks Crowley is a prophet and as such is a little biased, we should note that Crowley described democracy as an imbecile and nauseating cult of weakness. And biographer Lawrence Sutton calls Crowley a spoiled scion of a wealthy Victorian family who embodied the contradiction that writhed within many Western intellectuals of the time, deeply held racist viewpoints, courtesy of society, coupled with a fascination with people of color. Crowley also exhibited a general misogyny and described women as moral inferiors who had to be treated with firmness, kindness, and justice. I'll take justice. Crowley was also a desperate heroin addict, and at times a wonderful poet in the visionary style, and an unavoidable character in the recent history of magic, at least in the life of Lady Frieda Harris, who, despite the roller coaster of arrogance and neediness and insight and hilarity that was her friendship with him, remained a good friend to the end of his life. And she was truly inspired by the ideas he brought into harmony for her, from the Kabbalah to astrology, numerology and Egyptian history, spirituality and symbolism. And her tarot deck glows. It's alien and art deco and mathematical, hallucinogenic. Like Pixie Coleman Smith's deck, every card is a work of art. It's not easy to find that much info on Lady Frieda Harris, but my favorite little bio comes from the website of the United States Grand Lodge of the Ordo Templi Orientis. Lady Frieda became a member of OTO in 1938 after befriending Crowley. According to their website today, the order still aims, 1, to create, maintain, and promote a structured society of men and women within the United States of America who are united by their acceptance of the law of Thelema, by a common interest in magic, yoga, and hermetic science, by the common experience of ceremonial initiation and sacramental ritual, by common pledges of fidelity, cooperation, and mutual aid, and by certain common ideals, namely individual liberty, self-discipline, self-knowledge, universal brotherhood, and opposition to tyranny, superstition, and oppression. 2, to manage and govern this society in substantial conformance with the principles set forth in the writings of Aleister Crowley and other historical leaders of Ordo Templi Orientis. Lon Duquette writes that Thelema, Crowley's religion, which is actually based on messages initially received by his wife Rose, just to be clear. Supposedly from the messenger of the god Horus while they were in Egypt on their honeymoon, has come to be known as the philosophy of life that presumes that each individual, like each star in heaven, is possessed with a unique orbit and function in the universe. A Thelemite is one who attempts to discover, then execute, their unique will. So the OTO bio on Lady Frida describes her as a spiritual seeker. Her son Jack recalls childhood lessons in the teachings of Christian Science founder Mary Baker Eddy. Lady Frida studied anthroposophy and the projective geometry at Rudolf Steiner House under the tutelage of George Adams von Kaufmann and Olive Witcher. And oh man, I want to do such a long digression on Rudolf Steiner and the origins of biodynamic farming in the Waldorf schools, but for now I'll just say, check out Steiner's How to Know Higher Worlds, which begins, "The capacities by which we can gain insights into higher worlds lie dormant within each one of us. Mystics, Gnostics, and Theosophists have always spoken of a world of soul and spirit that is as real to them as the world we can see with our eyes and touch with our hands. Listening to them, we can say to ourselves at every moment, I know that I too can experience what they talk about. If only I unfold certain forces within me that today still lie dormant there. All we need to know is how to begin to develop these faculties for ourselves." Harris was a co-Mason. That's the radical feminist branch of Masonry that not only accepted all people equally, but also did away with the provision requiring belief in a god, at least for a while. And we'll do an episode sometimes and talk about atheist magic. You don't have to have a god. She designed a set of Masonic tracing boards. She became a student of Thelema upon meeting Aleister Crowley in 1937. Crowley recognized her co-Masonic degrees as equivalent to those in OTO, and from this point, she provided artwork for several of Crowley's books. On May 5th, 1938, Crowley borrowed for Frida a copy of a secret publication containing a description of the cards of the tarot. Harris suggested that she and Crowley create a deck according to these old Golden Dawn specifications, since none existed. In her later years, after doing set design for Ram Gopal's ballet, The Legend of the Taj Mahal, in 1956, she moved into a houseboat in Srinagar and studied Hinduism. This is my favorite part of her biography, and I hope you'll hold this image of her in your mind throughout the episode. The lady in her 80s, rocking to sleep at night in a houseboat in Srinagar, the summer capital of Jammu and Kashmir, on the banks of the Jhelum River. Lady Frida Harris lived from 1877 to 1962. She was the wife of British Parliament member and Liberal Chief Whip and Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party, Percy Harris. Percy was a radical liberal, passionate about social housing, and no doubt they loved each other and had shared values, but we get a glimpse of how she felt balancing political life and her art and magic when she writes to Crowley, "My spiritual state has been sadly neglected, perhaps because I have been trying to paint and live Percy's life at the same time as mine. Now these circumstances are giving me a chance. I have had 3 days rest, the first in 2 years, and I have even had time to read a bit of magic and try to assimilate your book. How satisfying to one's inside hunger. I have tried to cut the jungle round my caravan to look at these glorious apples and pears on my trees. They are so miraculous and so beautiful." Lady Frida was 60 years old when she began to collaborate with Crowley. Crowley was deep into a heroin and cocaine addiction, broke, and infamous for, among other things, painting occult symbols on an island off New Hampshire while living there alone for weeks, and getting kicked out of his Sicilian commune with two of his lovers and their 3 children after a child and another follower died from the unsanitary conditions, and being dubbed the wickedest man in the world by the tabloids. Alternately desperate for cash, and desperate to pass on the framework of his philosophy and insights into the universe, he began the work of the Thoth Tarot. The collaboration was largely long distance, so there are these piles of letters between Lady Frida and the wickedest man in the world to offer insight into their process. Based on the letters, the two were great friends with huge mutual respect who sometimes made each other fucking crazy. Harris worked much of the time in a small caravan with the complete darkness of blackout at night and bombs literally falling around her. She writes, I have done the Ten of Swords, and promptly Russia takes up arms. Where are we going? Then later, we are driven mad with soldiers here. The deck was deeply important to both of them. Crowley wrote, it is the vindication of my life's work for the last 44 years and will be the compass and power of the good ship magic for the next 2,000 years. Harris struggled with the work and struggled to manage Crowley, who repeatedly asks her in these letters for more money than the monthly stipend she was already paying him to work on the cards. Nevertheless, she loves the work. And like every seeker, the struggle to see the patterns in the violence and beauty of life consumes her. She writes, I have been reading your truly magical book. Oh no, I do not pretend to apprehend it, only it is like music, and the only kind of writing I want to read. Only it makes me feel as if I lived in a desert and I am mighty thirsty. Shall I never get on a bit? Yoga practices I never seem to advance in. I cannot live more quietly, but even then the business of living takes time. I am positively alarmed at the prospect of the end of this work. As if I do not get any more handed to me, I shall have to return to the awful life I have escaped from in my conscience during the last 2 years, and I doubt if I can. I do not think the ritual of magic is much good to me. I seem to have to draw everything I want to understand. Thank you beyond words for all your help, patience, and understanding. At any rate, thanks to that, you have penetrated a slight amount, and in the far distance, I can see a bit of what the wisdom of the past and the present might mean. I do wish I could do better. I feel like a lump of undigested suet. There is one more thing. I do not think those cards will sell if you include any sort of ritual. People generally are afraid of being made fools of, getting bad luck by associating with black magic, especially at these times when the world is all crossing itself to avert the evil eye. The weather. I don't find it too bad. It really is lovely to look at. The trees are encased in ice. I have never seen anything like it. Living and walking, everything ordinary has assumed a rare and dignified aspect, with the elements completely out of control. Also the howling wind and this new invention, ice, which is neither raining nor snowing, keeps everyone away. So I can read, paint, or cook to my entire satisfaction, also slither up and down the ladder to my studio, which provides the necessary exercise and danger to stimulate me and keep me warm. For the cards, I have put no name for the artist. I don't want to. Something informs me that I am lost if I take credit or publicity in designing the cards as an artist. Please understand this. No one can. The opposition against you in Oxford is very strong. My business is to get money to publish these cards if possible, and this is nearly impossible in the present war condition. I have been successful through using what influence I possess in getting at people with money to come and see the exhibition. This is using my social position foully. If they suspected that the cards were inspired by the arch-magician of black magic, what do they even mean? They would withdraw their patronage. I have had this conveyed to me politely and impolitely. Therefore, if you come to the private view or show up in any prominence, this attempt to launch the cards is doomed, and all the work and money lost. Can you be so large-minded and detached as to keep away until the thing is launched? If you court notoriety, it is sure to appear ultimately that you are the source, because so many people know it, and I am really afraid of the avalanche which will fall on me. I am trying to keep out, too, because I am bored by occult people. Loathe commercialism, do not want fame or notoriety, do not want money, but yearn, long desire for solitude. Any financial success will be yours. I have had my reward in the work. I wish I could paint in crystals. I wish I could paint in crystals. Dear Alistair, I do hope it's going to come out. I am simply sweating. That fool won't stand still, and I do hope it is going to be all right and you'll be satisfied. I can't do it well enough. Every sort of obstacle, damp weather, intense cold, an impossible situation of living in a caravan in midwinter. I am more than duty, but I dare not leave as much as do this as well as I can without interruption. I can hear the rumblings of a tumultuous world through the apple trees. If only it is all right. It has got all the symbols, only I've never seen any traditional card like it. And it has gone so far from the little bearded man, which it never was, for it appears to me as Christ and Buddha and Harpo and Pierrot and Harlequin and the giant panda and every other foolish and adorable person. And of course, I can't make a pastiche of all those, though I try. And indeed now I have forgotten how to spell. Why haven't I got living fire which could weave musically these beauties? I can't do it with pigment. I want poetry and music and light, not colored chalks. I do hope you're serious about this. You must be. You couldn't have written Tao Te King with your tongue in cheek, even with your beastly cleverness and adroit subtlety. Yours sincerely, Frida Harris. Dear Alistair, I am very sorry, but I am unable to protect you from yourself. Out of the inextricable confusion of your real and bogus financial affairs, I find only one thing, that you will always be in a muddle, and that to attempt to help you is like filling a leaking cistern, and I do not propose to begin to do so. I have told you always I have a weekly allowance, and that my lessons from you are saved out of that, and I cannot draw from the bank more than I have. Anything in the nature of speculation is quite foreign to my nature or my pocket. Your campaign of giving people too much to eat and drink in order to placate them in the great work is all wrong, and I expect you know it. If only you could be simple and dignified, people would flock around you to get what they really want in these hard times. That is the help of a colossal brain, but instead you cook for them because you are bored by them, and incidentally would like them to produce the wherewithal to stock your fantastic restaurant and cellar. Can't you stop? I suppose you can't. This is not my affair, but please do not try to get me to help. You prevent me from doing what I would like to do, and that is work on the tarot book with you. As I absolutely refuse to be entangled by your efforts to boost an absurdity. What a pity. I fear even now the work will be unfruitful. The house of God appears to me as a vortex, not a mouth. Or is it yours, which can't be filled by mortal effort, try as you may? Yours sincerely, Frida Harris. Around this same time, he wrote to a lawyer friend, "The tarot is an atlas of and guidebook to the universe. It has been my daily study since February 99, and my researches have cost me several thousand pounds. I have long determined to construct a pack embodying all the knowledge gained from anthropology, comparative religion, and so forth." Lady Harris offered to execute the cards from my designs. It was agreed that I should have a 2/3 share in the venture. From my rough sketches and descriptions, under my continual inspection, subject to my constant correction, I made her do some cards over again, 5, 6, even 8 times in one case. She made the set now on show at the Berkeley Galleries. There is one exception. The card numbered 1 was not shown to or authorized by me. I suspect a trick in this. She damaged the property by offering it for sale at cost price, thus alienating the libraries and booksellers and reducing my 2/3 interest to nil. I value the copyright at something like 20,000. A crude, vilely drawn and colored, ignorant, inferior pack, published in 1902 or thereabouts, has sold over 1,000 copies every year. Since then, at 15 a copy, I am quite sure that these admirable cards, with my book on the subject, which was to go with them in an ornamental box, would bring in far more annual receipts. I have a large following in the USA. They send me 50 a month or more, which is growing rapidly, especially now my hymn for Independence Day has been set to music and will be broadcast by the Cultural Garden League of Cleveland, Ohio on August 9th. There is also my free French song, Proof Enclosed, and the invention of the V sign will ultimately benefit my work. I first want to establish my 2/3 claim in the copyright. Secondly, my controlling interest in the cards themselves. If necessary, damages for her sly, underhand, sneaking, dishonorable, and dishonest action in giving this show without my approval and destroying the whole value of the copyright. Note bene, P.S. The property is actually vested in the OTO, Mr. Carl Germer, 1007 Lexington Avenue, New York City, as my grand treasurer general, and we had perhaps better sue in his name. Nota bene, PPS. Lady H's real motive is to conceal her 4 years' close association with me. Rather silly, then, to provoke a lawsuit. I shall ring up Saturday a.m. early. Perhaps you could lunch with me. Yours sincerely, Alistair Crowley. P.S. A friendly settlement is being tried. Don't do anything until I see you again. A.C. Harris set up and funded a series of shows of her works, as well as a limited edition of 200 decks of the cards, and that was the only time the Thoth deck would be published in either her or Crowley's lifetimes. And after the Tarot Project, Harris and Crowley maintained a friendship. It waxed and waned, but ultimately, they stayed close. Crowley could be a difficult person to like, and Harris was a strong enough character to step away from his tantrums and to throw a few of her own. Over the years, she continued to help him financially, and in the end, she was one of two executors of his will. The way he writes about her makes my stomach churn sometimes, and though his ideas are interesting and helpful to some of my own instincts about magic, I am much more interested in her cards, and in the math she studied to make them, and in the worldview of a person who has to draw things to understand them. The geometry she used was an evolution of strict Euclidean geometry developed by Descartes in the 17th century. It's called projective synthetic geometry. Descartes' ideas derived from mathematical and mystical ideas, in particular his non-Euclidean axiom of parallels meeting at infinity. Harris took courses in projective geometry from, and made friends with, Olive Witcher and George Adams. Adams had become interested in projective geometry as a path for exploring theoretical physics that didn't chase the discovery of the atom. Paul Dirac, one of the most significant physicists of the 20th century, formulated the Dirac equation, which describes the behavior of fermions and predicted the existence of antimatter, and he often said that when he was developing quantum mechanics, he used his favorite branch of mathematics, projective geometry. So far, I can only scrape the very top of understanding this, though, so if you are a math witch who can explain more, please write to us at missingwitches@gmail.com. I find it haunting anyway that this path, the one that doesn't lead to the atomic bomb, ends up being at the heart of the patterns and equations of quantum mechanics. And these meetings between Olive Witcher, George Adams, and Lady Freda Harris inspired the complex geometrical patterns in the cards. And they attempt to illustrate a mathematical revelation about the very nature of the universe, something about the infinite being inside each of us. As the lines meet, as above, so below. Adams and Witcher proposed mathematically that the infinite midpoint of non-Euclidean space was to be found in the plant world in every bud. The idea was connected with that of the lemniscatory correlation of figure 8, or infinite shape, between space and counter space. In Richard Kaczynski's essay, Projective Geometry in Early 20th Century Esotericism, he writes, higher math is, by its nature, an esoteric pursuit plumbed by a relatively small group of scholars and specialists. Projective geometry, after its 19th century zenith, found a new incarnation in a different kind of esotericism, the world of mysticism and magic. Here, the concepts of duality and of shapes without measure are understood to demonstrate that scientific principles govern growth and beauty in nature. Furthermore, these principles apparently exert their generative influence on the world from an ideal creative space or counterspace that is knowable to the trained mind. While the specifics may remain obscure even to many of the faithful, their significance has been preserved in the seminal writings of Kaufman and Witcher. And courtesy of the imaginative hand and eye of artist executant Frieda Lady Harris, projective geometry has also been disseminated surreptitiously in Aleister Crowley's immensely popular Thoth Tarot, whose beautiful and mysterious images beckon viewers to explore the depths of its secrets. The influence of projective geometry on Harris is obvious when one looks at the Thoth Tarot cards themselves. Although Crowley specified the major design elements for each card, he left Harris a comparatively free hand in respect to insignificant details, as he would write. She seized upon this freedom to express her artistic and esoteric interests. Harris was inspired by a large range of artistic influences. Her depiction of adjustment recalls the work of Aubrey Beardsley, while the tower is rendered in Picasso's jarring and disjointed cubism. Elsewhere, she references surrealist, expressionist, symbolist, and Art Deco styles. As first noted by Hoffman, projective geometry appears throughout, in both striking foreground images and subtle background textures and patterns. While not every card draws on Kaufman's teachings, geometric designs and arrangements, both projective and Euclidean, are prevalent. The Thoth Tarot's tremendous popularity, I have suggested elsewhere that it is second only to the ubiquitous Rider-Waite deck, has introduced images and concepts from projective geometry to vast audiences who otherwise might never have considered non-Euclidean mathematics. In a lecture she gave about the cards, Lady Freda Harris wrote, "Now the tarot cards, that I have seen seem to represent the thought of the period in which they were designed. I have made an effort in this present pack to embody this current mode of the century. Therefore, I have tried to introduce among the cards the element of time. In nearly all the designs, the straight lines of the former cards, such as the check patterns, the rays of the sun, the chart of the universe, and the stars, are expressed in a curve. I hope to convey the idea of movement. Death, in trumps, has to suggest the idea of reincarnation as opposed to putrefaction. He is weaving with his scythe a geometrical web of new forms. I think if you are listening to this podcast, you are like the Lady Frieda Harris, like Crowley and Amy and I and all the witches we've been missing, a seeker. Maybe ceremonial sex magic makes sense for you. Or maybe you are a nature witch, most at peace and empowered by the sound of trees. Or a city witch, math witch, lab witch, art or activist witch, healer or gardener, solitary or community organizer. Either way, you are like Harris's figure of death, weaving a geometrical web of new forms, bringing new life from the dark, new kinds of connection and kindness to light, returning from wild journeys to meet at the center point of infinity, to rock together in the belly of the houseboat, to paint a better world in crystals.
You must be a witch.
Thanks for listening to the Missing Witches podcast. Be sure to come back Wednesday for Witches Found, where I'll be talking to another amazing artist, witch, Marigold Santos. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, we're at missingwitches@gmail.com, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @missingwitches.